All right, it's good hour. Ben Ennis is here. He sticks around. Mm-hmm. You do what I say. What? I tell you to sit. You sit.
You didn't tell me to sit.
Yeah.
You don't forget it. I'm standing.
Yeah. Okay, do the whole show standing.
Yeah, that's fine. Maybe I will.
Maybe I tricked you into being such a little beta. Just follow.
Except this, you actually need me to sit because this is going to screw with your social media clip.
No, I don't care. You think your social media clip is really going to do it for my career?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. Oh, what will the people do without the Ben Ennis social clip? Boy, oh boy.
All right, this joke is over. Hey. I'm very tired.
Yeah, but yeah. Okay, I'm going to start the show with this question, okay? You ready?
Uh-huh.
How is soccer legal still? It's, how?
What do you mean? Oh, because of the violence. Uruguay?
Dude, soccer is too intense, okay?
Yeah.
So people...
I need the details there because apparently the families were in danger.
No, hold on. That wasn't even the only thing that happened yesterday, though. In hockey, right?
Mm-hmm.
In hockey, there's no fighting anymore. Yeah. But whenever there's a fight, there's like... You know, those four Twitter accounts that really cover hockey but secretly hate it. And they're like, enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Enough is enough. Don't you know these grown men who understand the risks can get hurt?
Mm-hmm.
And you go, all right. And yet in soccer, yesterday, all I see is clips from Germany where... British fans are like pinned down in a bar because Netherlands fans like throwing shit. You saw that?
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. It was like Netherlands fans are like attacking them in the streets and the German police have to come in and shut it all down. And they're...
I missed that.
Jose, you saw it? Come on. You're on soccer Twitter. My whole Twitter is soccer Twitter now. Yeah, see, you saw it.
I don't... Yeah, you just told me that you do the For You tab. I never do that.
Buddy, For You is electric.
You know what? For me, the things I choose that are for me.
Yeah, and guess what? I'm telling you, Elon knew better. I should have known that the world's richest man knew what kind of content.
He knows how to get you going,
brother,
is the thing.
Seeing your tweets, what do you think the Jays should do versus what Elon has curated for me? Holy! It is, I would say that there was a point in time where Instagram took over for me as the top dog.
Mm.
Twitter's back, baby. Twitter's back because of the For You tab. Yeah, man. Twitter is all the way back.
You're obviously not in on Elon because you called it Twitter, right?
Like, no, I will X. never call it that. Elon, that's the dumbest thing he ever did. X. Just like, dude, shut up. hey, man, shut up. So I'm watching the For You page. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, the entire For You page is just... so intense. Did you see my tweet? I tweeted about this DePaul guy, the diver, right?
Yeah.
The Canada game.
Yeah.
All I tweeted was DePaul is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Which, yeah, when you literally aren't touched and you fall down in a heap, that's like, dude, and unquestionably somebody, a level of embarrassment.
No, he's super embarrassing. And whatever, there's a certain section of soccer fans that genuinely think it's like good for the game that defend that kind of stuff. No, there's a huge faction.
Good
yes.
for the game? I mean,
no question.
At best, you have to say like, oh, well, that's part of the game.
No.
Good for the game?
Yes, because they think it's like, some people call it the dark arts, which is, I think is such a funny thing where they're like, the dark arts, it's like, it's all it is embellishing contact.
Uh-huh.
It's really not that.
That makes it sound like it's magic. Like study
listen,
with like the.
as a massive soccer guy now, as someone whose entire For You page is just soccer content. And WNBA. Because I just get fired up. Everything Caitlin Clark, I'm like, yes. I'm just there. All right, Caitlin, let's go. Let's do this thing. No, I don't think that Angel Reese's double-double streak is all that legit. She misses a lot of layups. that's my entire For You page. So as a soccer guy, there are things that aren't perfect. I'm here to try to correct them, try to make them a little bit better. But one of them is just like, it's too intense. You got people... I'm watching Canada soccer, and it feels like every part of me is on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our country should just fold up and quit because we're not as good at soccer. I'm like, I'm never going to view Argentinian people the same way.
No.
Like, I'm always going to just, I'm never going there. I'll never go.
I'll never forget the name, Rodrigo De Paul.
No.
Like, he's enemy number one.
But I just see this stuff where it's the Netherlands fans. I didn't know. Dutch people, are they violent by nature?
I thought they were kind of stoned, like...
Yeah,
they were wearing,
I thought they were
like,
chill.
Wooden clogs that were into, like, tulips.
Yeah, I thought we were going there. And...
like, weird sex stuff, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here
and,
we
like,
are.
Doing a lot of drugs.
And here they are, just it's like they got all the pot and mushrooms in the world, and they're chucking chairs and beer bottles at people going like, our soccer team, this is before the game. The game didn't even start yet, and they were like, we're going to throw stuff at you, and we're going to commit crimes. We're going to get arrested in an internet, like, in a different country.
Yeah.
And they're getting beat down by the police, and then you've got the British guys cheering, and I'm going, man, that's the coolest thing ever. These British guys get to cheer now and do all their songs, and the songs are cool. And then these games start, and they're also so intense. And, you know, there's just all this violence. Then it ends, culminates with the Copa yesterday where you've got Uruguayan players going into the stands fighting, and then this guy's pleading for his family's safety. And I went, we got to shut it down. We got to – for all – soccer's amazing, but all the ancillary stuff – it's just, I love how we just accept it. We're like, yep, you know, that's soccer culture. We had a whole movie that was just like hooligans movie with that guy from the girl show that masquerades as a guy show.
I don't know.
Anarchy, Sons of Anarchy.
Apparently there's a really good Netflix documentary on the guys that showed up at the England Euro final that just didn't have tickets and just started destroying everything.
That's their thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just mostly like cool. South America has a real history of that, right? Like with the, what do they call them? The ultras?
Yeah, it's just so funny to me that we get so stoked on these tournaments. We're like, nice.
Yeah.
It's Euro. Nice. It's Copa. Nice. It's World Cup. The world will come together and beat the crap out of each other and destroy
Who
property.
Says the world's going to come together?
I don't know.
I think the appeal of it is the passion and the how much people all over the world care about it.
They're so passionate that they're going to burn your store down.
Imagine how much passion that would take to sacrifice like your future freedoms and liberties.
But that's the thing is, here's the thing. I get it. Because like I said, when I was in that bar.
What?
When I was in that bar with those Argentinians, when I was down at the Dip, I was down, beautiful Cafe Diplomatico, having a great time.
Wait, for the Argentina game?
No, the first game.
Oh.
And there were those Argentinian fans that were so rude.
Yeah. Les was on the line in that game, but yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Les was on the line. We were playing the number one team in the world. We're Canada. And by the end of it, I was like, nah. I have very strong feelings against you people compared to what I like have ever felt through a sporting match. Like I would say the most I've ever hated a fan was Sens because it was like in the early 2000s going to those games. And now I'm like Argentinian soccer. That's my blood
rival.
That's
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's
soccer's
been so long.
Too intense.
It's been so long since we've seen best on best Canada, the United States in hockey, right? Like but yeah, does that I don't know, the antagonism, I don't know if it exists among fan bases in the sport. You might be onto something about the sporting fan bases.
Yeah, and Mike Jose just sent me another clip. Police officer shooting a Brazilian player in the leg last night. Like, it's just
player?
Soccer. Yeah.
In the leg?
Soccer, baby.
Oh.
The beautiful game. Sorry, football.
It's going to be rough for that guy to play football if he just got shot in the leg.
Yeah.
Feels like the wrong spot to get shot in if you're a soccer player.
Anyway, just it's a lot going on. Okay, so I was thinking about this last night, too. As much as I've been feeling super intense about Canada soccer, it dawned on me that we had a better chance of winning Copa than Canada basketball has at winning at the Olympics, and we've been kind of sold it as the other way around, where it's like, oh, we could be number two in the world. We're the challengers to the United States, but we're just 48 in soccer. And I think that I am going to enjoy the Canada basketball less simply for this reason. They're in the group of death. It's going to be extremely difficult. All these games are going to be super stressful. Do I love basketball? Am I thrilled that we finally have the golden generation basically all together? Yes, but the fear of choking, the fear of losing in this group stage.
You have something to lose.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's nothing to lose with Canada soccer. You have...
Exactly.
And it sucks because there's no... Like, last Olympic cycle would have been the one where it's like, all right, we're back, and like all these guys are so young, and it's like still kind of the innocent climb. You go... There's no innocent climb. It's like into the fire.
Right here, fire.
Like the World Cup felt like all... Remember how stressful that was? Now it was amazing when they came back and beat Spain.
Yeah.
And that's the like reward you get if you survive it. Same with like playoff baseball, right? It's so painful to watch playoff baseball.
No, playoff baseball, I get addicted to it every year, but it is also the most painful of all things, every pitch.
But if you survive it, everybody, it's like you've been through a war, and everybody like the big hug. We did it. We got through. I mean, nothing had more stakes, it felt like, than beating Spain at the World Cup to get into the Olympics. yeah. because it had been so many heartbreaking, yeah. disappointing losses just to even get a chance for the bigger heartbreak. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's no innocent climb for this group. No. That's it. It's like right into it. And they're in the group of death, but who cares? If they don't get out of the group of death, massive disappointment.
Yeah, the innocent climb rules.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
There was a, like, it happened for the Leafs of all teams.
Oh, happens for,
yeah. We're ecstatic. Yeah. I mean, game one against the Senators and, of course, the six games against
people
the Capitals.
People liked Mitch Marner.
Oh, my God.
they
Can
really
you
liked
believe
him.
It?
They're like, Mitch Marner, good so Ontario good. Kid. Look so at him good. Go. He's amazing.
Yeah.
We picked the right guy over Hanifin.
Yeah. Sucks with this Raptors team too. They don't get an innocent climb either, even though like the players are young. It's like everybody's
making,
getting paid. It's like,
making
oh,
this point the other day.
It's like you can't finish in the lottery because you're
no. You wish you could though.
Yeah, but your GM, well, your president said that you're not. You're good. So you better
no, but
be good.
He said both. That was why it was such a weird thing. He kept talking about rebuild, but then saying that last year was a disappointment. And I went, okay, well, which is it? Because you've got 50% of your cap space and two guys, and then you add RJ Barrett to the mix. Mm-hmm. You just traded. I love this too. So this is twice now. Utah has acquired their pick. You got Walker Kessler, who's awesome. I would have saved them from, you know, having to pay Jakob Poeltl.
Yep.
And then this year they drafted the kid Collier with the pick that the Raptors sent them for Ogbaji, the kid from USC that plummeted the draft. And it's just a summer league game, but his first summer league game, he scored like 28 points and looked amazing. And he was like he's your classic high pedigree guy that fell in the draft, had a bad college year, but was a five-star recruit. And I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. This is going to be the best pick in the entire draft is the one that the Raptors traded away for Oche Ogbaji and Kelly Olynyk. Cause they felt like we need to make this now. We need to get these guys in here immediately. We got to be 500. We just have to be 500 immediately. Anyway, back to the soccer stuff. Do you agree with me that we had a better chance at winning Copa?
No.
No, once we were, sorry, you know what? That's not true because we didn't have a better chance at winning Copa because to get there and accomplish all the wins, that was further far-fetched. But do you agree that we have a better chance of beating Argentina in a soccer game than our basketball team does of beating Team USA at this Olympics?
In a one-off game, though?
Yeah, that's my whole point.
I guess. I mean, when you do have Anthony Edwards and Jason Tatum and Anthony Davis coming off the bench and it's like Nikhil Alexander-Walker is like, getting swatted like routinely at the rim.
To me, it's just the big man rotation is hilarious. Yeah. And also thinking as happy as I am with this backcourt, and I hope people don't interpret this as like me crapping on Canada basketball because I'm stoked about it. It's incredible.
USA basketball, it's like the dream. They have their best players again, have two of the top 10 in the history of the sport playing on that team.
There were two things that got me last night when I was watching it. One was that I don't think Jamal Murray makes Team USA. And I think if you think that, you don't really know hoops.
Yeah.
Sorry, but there's no way he makes that team. And two is Joel Embiid versus Dwight Powell and Kelly Olynyk.
Dwight Powell Ken hung Birch. In, though.
Yeah.
Hey, he got frustrated. He was swinging his elbow. He's throwing bows.
Yeah. By the way, DePaul is my new most hated athlete of all time, but Joel Embiid is right there. He's like right behind him. He's the second closest guy.
Oh my God.
When they did the hometown Cameroon thing on the while he's shooting free throws, I was like, this
what's worth? Like we talk about KD glomming
he's
on
new
to
KD.
The.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, we were doing this yesterday.
Brutal.
He's the new glom king. Like Like this is his thing. He's going to be a huge
loser.
How about
Grange throwing shade too? When he was missing a whole bunch of shots.
Grange's Twitter is, again, he ends up in my For You now. He's in the For You.
I'm paraphrasing, but yeah. Oh, I think Joel Embiid just realized that the Olympics is like six consecutive winner-take-all playoff games.
Yeah. It's like, oh, better fake a hamstring injury. How did the Clippers called back Kawhi and the Sixers are like, yeah, no, go play for USA.
Right. No, 100%.
Yeah, no, this means a lot to you. When you grew up in the Cameroon, you were just dying to win for USA basketball. That was your dream.
Maybe they're just hoping that he understands what it's like to play on a team that wins. Like, I don't know, that will cure what ails him. But yeah, no, I wouldn't be putting more miles on the tires for Joel Embiid.
Either way, so I'm reconciling with these feelings last night. And I know it's reactionary because I'm still very excited for the Olympics. I cannot wait for Canada's group of death. I really cannot. I felt a bit of defeatism watching.
They're not going to beat the Americans.
No, but that was it. I watched it and I went, what's going to be a success here if we end up in a gold medal game against the States? Like, losing by single digits? Would that be incredible? Like, what would have to happen? Because Canada had the lead in the first quarter and people would go,
it was 11-1. Oh,
yeah, because the Americans
missed all their shots.
It was truly. I don't think it was.
Joel Embiid took a shot that went off the backboard, like from three. I think
it was actually unbelievable. It was genuinely out of all the more shocking things I've seen in sports. It was a collection of players. Six. That's what I mean. That collection of players playing as though they had all gotten monstarred. I went, oh my god, is this how Canada won? That they stole their powers through a basketball and they got little aliens in the back. This is great. Good strategy, boys. But yeah, I just felt like, damn. There's going to be so much expectation. There's going to be so much pressure. This is going to be so intense. Mm-hmm. And all of it is going to be through the eyes of don't fail, don't fail, don't fail versus what we just had with Canada soccer, which is, hey, just improve. Just go out there and play your best. Hey, go out there and have a moment, right? Mm-hmm. And that run was so fun. And I wonder if the Canada basketball run is going to feel the same way. Again, it's different. I know I'm a diehard. I've wanted this program to be in this position for, a long time. Obviously Steve Nash in the Olympics, but I think really when Texas started to get like Corey Joseph and Mike Kabongo and Tristan Thompson, when I started to look at it going, whoa, we might have a collection of guys when Wiggins was on the come up and we were starting to like really look out at this and say, man, Kelly Olynyk is going to come. And this generation was starting to crop up and thinking about what this could actually be. Now it's here. Mm-hmm. And, I'm nervous.
Yeah, pressure is a privilege, though, buddy.
Like, thank you.
This is it.
That was nice. This is
why you lifted all these weights. This is because the reward is better, right? Like, ultimately, and I guess this would counter your argument, like, you want to be in a situation where you can win, and that means
that's
that...
That's what I think the group is. I think the group is going to be, sneakily the best part, because it's just they're all these super high intense games against really good countries.
And that's the real, that's like expectation should be, it doesn't matter that you're facing Giannis.
No, if you win this
Spain.
Group, if you go 3-0 in the group, I genuinely would view that as like the great accomplishment more almost than the medal.
Yeah, the medal would be good too. It's just funny also that in Olympic sports, we've decided three is like the cutoff. Four, you're a loser. If you finish fourth, you're a loser. But third, you're like kind of a winner. This is...
Some people think third is better than second.
It's okay.
Well, you win the game, you go out with a win.
Sure, great. I don't know. It's stupid.
I'll tell you this.
My pro sports where it's like, there's one winner and there's a bunch of losers.
Yeah, sure. But I'm just saying, as someone who's played in both those kinds of games, as a kid, granted, it's like, it feels nice when you win the game and you're like, we won one.
Oh,
you know?
We haven't, have we seen the fallout also from this, the Uruguay get into it with the Colombian fans thing? Like, maybe Canada's going to be handed a bronze medal at the Copa America because they have guys that are disqualified or the whole team.
I thought you were saying that, they'll disqualify. No, they'll play it out. They're not going to, buddy, they're not going to MetLife and having this. Although this has been a bit of an eye-opener for the World Cup in our countries, right?
I didn't
even think about that side of it, which is like seeing those fans get the beer bottles thrown at them. It's like, that's going to
be at the Brazen Head.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Anyways, back to what you're saying about...
You know what? I don't think I'm going to be here for World Cup.
Hey, I want to drive on the Gardner when they reopen the lanes for those like 2 weeks. Yeah. Holy cow. To say I did it. And then back into the purgatory of traffic congestion forever after that. Anyways.
Yeah, the World Cup's going to come here and every local is going to be like, we're just staying inside like we're in a bomb shelter this entire time.
So you're a coward if you feel that way about teams with stakes, because that's what you're supposed to.
I am a coward. I'm afraid to be hurt.
That's what sports are about, is putting it on the line, man. Yeah. Having, there's nothing, it's like fun as like a little respite to have the innocent climb and the low stakes and everything's gravy.
Yeah.
But ultimately it's everything's gravy because you don't have a chance to win. When you have a chance to win and you have something to lose, that's the best thing about sports. The anxiety, it's supposed to be like not commensurate with real world anxiety. It's supposed to be like, hey, this is where we put our little fan anxiety. That's fun. We get like this fun anxiety, and then when it's over, we realize it actually doesn't impact our lives to a great degree. We're supposed to crave that. Stop being a coward.
Yeah.
You're a coward.
Yeah, I know. And being told I'm a coward by Ben Ennis.
It's rough. Like the world's foremost coward.
It's,
I would know. That's the thing. That's why I can identify.
It's
really the Spider-Man meme right now.
Really stings. Anyway, all right. Yeah, I'm going to take a quick break. We'll come back. I genuinely feel as though I'm taking crazy pills with the last, like, I would say 36 hours of Blue Jays discourse in terms of what the future is going to look like and what we're going to see at the end of this month.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, good hour continues. Subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars. Follow on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. You can follow Ben too at Sportsnet Ben.
Don't say it like that.
Why?
That's nice. Say it with more verve.
Follow him with Sportsnet Ben.
That's better. Thank you.
Yeah, good one. You regret putting Sportsnet in your handle? Yes, you do. That
I mean, not actively, and not until you raise it. I don't think about it. I mean, I will when I. Well, I guess when I'm fired, I guess I'll have to change it. But then, when I. Am I verified? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe I don't regret it.
They removed all our verifications, which was actually kind of a good thing because it got out of hand. And then they were like, you can buy them. And then you went, okay. And then
they started giving them out for free.
But it hurt because I didn't get one.
Me neither.
So it was like,
turns out.
They were like, oh, what?
Ew.
Nobody. Pay up. You want it? Pay up.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So according to Mark Feinsand,
mm-hmm.
quote, according to the sources, the Blue Jays have told other clubs that they are willing to move players with expiring contracts, but those with control beyond 2024 are not being traded. The consensus among a dozen executives we spoke to is that the Blue Jays will attempt to move most of their rental players if they sell, by the way, working to add some prospects to the farm system that entered the season ranked number 24 by MLB Pipeline, worst by Baseball America, by the way. Quote, I think they sell pending free agents, but nothing else unless they get blown away, an NL executive said, end quote. So if you're not aware, Ross Atkins is running a draft right now. Like, this Sunday. Is a guy who has...
His ninth.
Yeah. He's running another draft. Can't fire him in season. Goodness, no. You cannot fire the guy. You got to let him run another draft when he is picked... maybe go read Ben Nicholson Smith's piece and see exactly what he has picked.
I got the first round picks if you want the names.
Oh, I've done that, but yes, go ahead.
TJ Zoik.
Yep.
Nate Pearson, he's in the major leagues.
Yeah.
Logan Warmoth.
Yeah, Warmoth was a great pick.
Jordan Groshans.
Yep.
Alec Manoah had a moment there.
Yep.
Austin Martin, Gunnar Hoglund, Brandon Barrera,
yeah.
and Arjun Nimala.
Yeah, who I read yesterday, which again, he's like 18 years old, whatever, but it's like he's hitting like 200.
No, but okay. So you haven't watched recently. So
he was
horrible to start when they over-promoted him. Then he took some time away where they're like, hey, be good. And then he is good because he's got Joey Votto hitting behind him. Line of protection.
Nice.
He's been very good recently, though.
This is why I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Most people I speak to keep talking to me about how they think the Blue Jays can compete next year. They keep coming to me with, well, you got to keep an eye on 2025. You got to keep an eye on 2025. And I want to... outline what I think the Blue Jays need to compete in 2025 if they are just selling their rental players, right? So I came up with the following list because, by the way, when they trade these rental players, the largest return is going to come in the form of Yusei Kikuchi, who by most accounts is not going to fetch a King's ransom. He's not going to get a Juan Soto return where you're getting like, oh, we got Michael King and so forth.
We know how good he is, but he went a month without a quality start.
Yes. No one's breaking the bank for Yusei Kikuchi.
He's also a pending free agent.
And
he's a rental player.
Also, recently, we saw a setback with Yimi Garcia where, I got to imagine... What are we today? July 11th? The trade deadline is in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be harder for Jimmy to recoup all of his value and have teams feel as though he is 100% ready to go and that you're going to just mortgage the future for that reliever. Anyways, I wrote these things down. So going into next season, if the Blue Jays want to compete, they are going to need 6 new bullpen arms.
Oh, yeah.
That's the words of Ben Nicholson-Smith, by the way. It's not just me. It's the worst bullpen in baseball. You saw it yesterday when they brought in
Brandon Little and Brian Burr.
They brought in Brandon Little and Brian Burr. And even at the end, they bring in Bowden Francis, who's a write-off.
Like cement mixer.
Bang.
Yeah,
just immediately throwing meatballs. And you go, it's quite something to be up. I think it was 9-3 at one point and go, this is far from over.
Chad Green was warming up multiple times in the game.
You need two starting pitchers, in my opinion, minimum, because you're going to lose Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. You're not getting Manoah back to start the season, so that's two spots. Bowden Francis is not happening, and you have nothing in the system. Again, Ricky Tiedemann left with another – this is going to shock everybody involved. Ricky Tiedemann threw baseballs, and it hurt his arm.
As it would for most people, to be fair.
Yeah, it would for most people. But, anyone that's dreaming on...
It's tough, when that's your career.
Yeah,
it is. You're like, that's my livelihood.
If every time I did a radio show or a podcast, my voice got blown out and I couldn't do a podcast for 3 months, the bosses here might be like, I don't know if we can rely on giving you a show. Maybe you're a guest.
I don't know, but, if the rare times that you were healthy enough to do a show, it was the all-time banger show of... it was just unreal.
Yeah, okay.
Wouldn't they be tempted?
Once every 6 months, you give one banger show. Okay, continuing. A corner outfield bat, because Dalton Varsho is going to move to center field. Yep. That's pretty clear.
George Springer's not going anywhere.
Okay, so you need a corner outfield bat.
Agreed.
You need a DH.
Yep.
Who is going to be better than Justin Turner. You can't bring back Justin Turner.
Yeah. When you talk about the bats, I'm looking at three bats and wherever you, third base, corner outfield, DH.
Yeah.
And you can figure out second base.
I also have a third baseman.
Yeah. Catcher, there's nobody there.
Yes. And it's very nice that Ernie Clement has had back-to-back games with home runs, but I would like to vehemently state that if Ernie Clement is your starting third baseman next year, you're not competing in earnest anyway. So let's be very real about this. And yes, it was a great pitch he hit yesterday. Awesome, awesome home run.
Probably Logan not sustainable Webb. To hit it a foot off the ground.
I've said what I've had to say. I like Ernie Clement. I do not believe that he is an everyday third baseman. Even watching some of the defense sometimes, you're just like, man, he's not good at throwing the baseball.
He can be somebody's 26th man.
Fine. Whatever. You need no negative regression from old Chris Bassett. And
he's 35.
Old Kevin Gausman, by the way, who is
33.
Yeah. You need a bounce back from Bo and from Springer.
Springer is what, 34?
Yep. You need another catcher because you're trading Danny Jansen, who, by the way, you need a catcher that is going to give you Danny Jansen level production? Are you okay? Fine. There's nobody there really than that free agency. And you need material step backs from the following teams. The Orioles, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Mariners, the Royals, the Guardians, and the Twins, all teams that I think anybody with a few brain cells would agree are far better than the Toronto Blue Jays are right now. But also none of those teams to me are about to break down. And yes, it's baseball and things can happen, injuries. One of these teams will likely not be very good next year, right? But which one of those teams that I just said is going to be taking a major step back? Oh, by the way, you have to make all these improvements with a farm system that in that article by Mark Feinstein was, again, ranked 24th by MLB Pipeline, which is a more optimistic view of their farm system. By the way,
that was preseason. I think it's gotten worse.
I was going to say that was 24th before the season started when Ricky Tiedemann had not gotten hurt again. Actually, I think he probably had because he's always hurt. He's perpetually hurt. But it was also before their number one hitting prospect, Aurelvis Martinez, didn't pop for steroids.
Yeah.
So please explain to me how there are real, genuine conversations. And I'm talking about smart baseball people I know that keep running this out to me going, nah, this team's going to compete next year. They're going to be ready to compete next year. No, they feel like they can compete next year. Please explain to me how this isn't just, again, gaslighting a fan base that has been saying for 2 years that this product is not good enough, that this core is not good enough, that this front office, the idea of process and that everybody's dumb. Every Blue Jays fan is dumb. It's all just bad luck and bad bounces and bad timing and, woe is them. And if they could only just stick to the process a little longer that this is going to work out, please explain to me, Ben, which part of those things that I just outlined is even a half-truth, even something that isn't, a necessity, something that's maybe it's, one of those things.
I'll answer your question when you tell me where these circles are that you're hanging, where people are having this conversation. Well, because, like, I've heard, like, the general people who are not Blue Jay specific baseball opinionists, insiders, who have that general idea in their heads, or, you know, they talk about their little sources are like, oh yeah, wow, what a nightmare season for the Blue Jays. But you got to figure the talent is going to be better if you run it back this way. But anybody that's watched this team doesn't have that opinion. It feels straw manny, but like,
it's not.
Okay.
I promise you it's not. Fans are not feeling this way, mm-hmm. but I promise you baseball people are talking this way consistently. This is the message that's already being pushed, is we're not punting on 2025.
Yeah. I mean, so there's two things. There's like, are they going to do that? And should they do that? Because, like, pretty clearly they are going to do that.
Yeah.
And you understand from the front office's perspective.
No, I don't.
I do.
No, I don't.
I 100%.
No.
What ownership lets its front office go through two rebuilds?
Oh, you
like,
don't.
How do you get a decade worth of runway?
You don't.
Have no playoff wins, no division titles, no future.
Yeah.
And a high payroll, and then get to say, let's shake the Etch-A-Sketch and do
Guess
it
what?
Over again.
You don't. You say goodbye. You say thanks for the stadium.
But, like, why would you admit to that? You would never admit to that.
Why?
If you're still in charge, because then you're saying, fire me.
Yeah. No. If you,
why would you admit to that?
No. I think that ownership should absolutely be firing these guys.
Yes. Yes,
both
I know.
Of
but,
them.
But until that happens, that's why that hasn't happened yet. So that's why I understand why the front office has no choice but to say, we got to go for it again in 2025. Because if they stand up and say, we see what you just said, like that, there's just no counter to that.
Yeah.
Because you need all those things to happen. The things that you need to go right, even to be an above 500 team next year, is like, it's astronomical
for
this.
It's not happening.
We need to really start thinking about not 2025, but like, what are we looking at in 2026?
Well, also, given what your parameters are right now, letting guys walk for nada, as in, or lower that returns, like taking diminished returns on guys like Gausman, or not getting anything for Bo.
You have to have insane job security to think that you could bring that to ownership and say, hope you enjoyed the run.
You know what?
That was making three wild card rounds and zero wins,
dude.
Because we're going into like the doldrums. I don't know how long it's going to take, but like, this is no good.
I don't think you have to go into the doldrums. This is okay. I've always been told by people, right? Like when Dubas, for example, was a pending free agent, let's call him, when his job security was in question, mm-hmm. that these executives are never going to do anything that is damaging to a franchise, because they ultimately know that they always want to be perceived as smart, and that these jobs...
Nothing in their own self-interest that
yes.
hurts the future of the current franchise.
Yes, and I don't believe that purely. Like, I think that everybody does things to try to salvage their position.
You can even go back to 2015 and Alex Anthopoulos.
Yes.
It worked, but like that was totally self-preservational.
Yes. And you could even look at Dubas the year before he left, trading for Ryan O'Reilly. Look at all the draft picks that he gave up for in that trade deadline, the one before he ends up getting fired. So do I think that it is truthful that executives don't get a little self-defense-y and make moves that are a bit more aggressive when they're trying to either cement legacies or renew jobs? Yeah, of course. I'm not an idiot. But to me, this, if you triple down, this is the true fear. You are going to do irreparable harm to this fan base, because people are already pissed and checked out. People are livid with this baseball team. Like, who do you know right now that is clamoring within your circles to have you get Blue Jays tickets? For the first time in my life, like truly, as an employee here, mm-hmm. as someone who, you
Since
know, works
2015,
in sports.
Because the franchise was viewed differently. Maybe 2013,
I'm just telling you,
honestly.
This is the first time during this run since 2015, 2016, where I don't have people going, hey, how should I get tickets? Like, hey, do you get tickets? Like, is this, I want to go down to a Blue Jays game. Like, that's just not happening anymore. Like, it's just not. I'm not getting that from people. People are pissed. You look at every single article that's being written about this team. You look at real, honest assessments of this team. You look at just, like, listening to the fans. because everyone does the Brian Burke thing of, oh, if you lift in the fans, you're going to be sitting with them. This is a fan base that deeply cares about this team and has really sunk in a ton of equity since 2015. If you try to gaslight them and run back the same group in 2025, I think that it's going to take a longer time to get these people back. And you're going to have a team and a run that is as special as 2015 to get people to feel the same way about the organization. Like, it's plain and clear. Nobody likes this baseball team. Nobody likes this front office. Nobody likes what the product has been now for a couple of years. They don't feel super attached to anybody on this team except for still maybe Vladdy. I think that the Bo thing is still there too, but it's been greatly diminished by the season that we've had. Nobody cares about Kevin Gausman in the city. Like, nobody cares about Chris Bassett. What they need to see is real and meaningful action that they are going to try and change something beyond just Yusei Kikuchi. And all of those window dressings that I just kind of discussed, like, that they're going to try to pivot off of, it's not going to be enough. It's not going to work. And so, to me, this is the easiest thing ever, which is take the pieces that you can get right now. You're not punting necessarily on 2025 because you still are going to have Vladdy, and I don't think you can trade Bo now anymore. You're going to have some of these younger guys that have come up. You're still going to have enough to be this and try to use those assets to be good in 2026. Go spend money this offseason. Who cares? Start to build towards 25.
So then who are you talking about trading? You're talking about the pitchers, right? You're talking about Kevin Gausman and Chris Bassett.
Yes, it should be that. I would take a Bo trade as well, but it's not for Gavin Lux. It's like you have to do better. If you could get like a controllable starting pitcher for him.
If you can convince the Dodgers that the real Bo is in there and he just needs to be back in a winning environment, and the career track record is the thing that you should be paying attention to, not just the half a season of track record this year, that you can get a normal return on Bo Bichette. So, I mean, what you're saying is not that dissimilar to what they're going to do. And in every report, it is, like, even in that Feinsand one, you said, they're listening on guys that do have years of control beyond this one.
It certainly doesn't feel like those guys are moving.
No. The problem is you have no pitching depth. There's nobody in the minor leagues. So, like, the job that is already hard this offseason does become harder if you're trying to backfill, like, Chris Bassett and Kevin Gausman. And can you convince a playoff contender? Like, I think it's easier with Gausman.
That's the one.
I think it's easier with Gausman because even at his best this season, there's the old Kevin Gausman, game one starter of the postseason last year. Like, he has the strikeout ability, like Cy Young contender. I don't know, even the Mets, when they made the playoffs with Chris Bassett, where they started him in a must-win game at the end of the year to win the division. It is Chris Bassett. Chris Bassett is awesome. I love watching Chris Bassett. Yeah, what he's been able to do throughout his major league career is amazing. At 35 years old, he needs the new pitch com with the 45 buttons. That's awesome.
Pitches career high.
162 games. Give me Chris Bassett as part of your rotation. I don't want him anywhere near a playoff game. If Chris Bassett had the start he had yesterday in a postseason game, guess what? He's not getting through five.
Yeah.
He's lifted maybe in the first inning. Through like 40 pitches in the first inning, certainly not getting through two where he threw over 60.
I actually think that the guy you most keep is Bassett.
Sure.
That the guy that you're actually trading is Gausman.
Of course. I would
even entertain Barrios trades. I really would. I'd be like, if you come at the Blue Jays with something significant
there's a price
enough
for everything.
Bassett just being an innings eater that. Yeah, as a depth guy that you can run out there once every 5 days reliably, that actually has more value to the Blue Jays
100%.
Considering what the return would be than the other two guys.
And if you're a playoff team, because everybody makes the playoffs, like you're not like the Blue Jays in 2021 where it's like, we just need to get into the playoffs and then we can do our thing. It's like, if you're good enough, like if you really have visions of doing damage in the playoffs, like you're comfortably into the playoffs because every loser team makes the playoffs. You don't need Chris Bassett to cover like the remaining whatever 15 starts of the season that he's going to make. Yeah. What you need is somebody to factor in the postseason for you. And to me, Gausman would be that guy. So we're talking about one extra guy that you're...
Well, and I think that you got to move Bo in the offseason.
Sure. If you can, but again, if you can convince somebody that the real Bo is in there...
It doesn't matter.
I mean,
I'm
does
not
matter.
Paying Bo.
I mean, for 1 year. Well, you mean an extension.
No, you cannot let guys walk for nothing.
Yeah.
You can't.
Well, unless it's like actually, oh, it's like, it's, I guess technically more than nothing, but it's pretty close to nothing. Like, no offense to Gavin Lux, but I don't that's nothing.
I don't think that Bobichet is going to fetch you nothing. I just don't believe that that is his reputation now around baseball from one down year when this has always been a streaky player who obviously is
He's never been like this. 2022 is like, he was still had an OPS over 700 at this point when he was hitting seven in July in 2022.
Yep.
And he went nuts. But like, he's got an OPS under 600 now.
Here's what I would have to believe. That a couple of organizations would look at Bobichet and say, this is a diminished asset. We can buy him for cheaper. Clearly, the price of the brick has not gone up on Bobichet, right? Like, this is not someone that you're buying at a premium anymore, which, again, goes back to saying trade him last offseason, but whatever. I would have to think that an organization will want to trade for him now and go, well, let's get him in the building. Let's get him for the two runs. And why wouldn't we want to see what he actually looks like and try to get him in with our hitting coaches, get him in with our program, see how much of this is situational with him, and then we can decide to walk away from the contract, and we can decide to not have to re-up this guy. The upside of Bobichet is still very clear and obvious to just about every contender. Why would a team like Cleveland not want to take a shot on Bobichet and say it's worth giving up, you know, a young, controllable starter to acquire potentially an all-star shortstop for a playoff run and a half? I'm not buying the idea that his floor has cratered to the point where all his value is Gavin Lux or Magic Beans.
Yeah, if that's the case, then absolutely. I'd be taking calls on Bobichet. No,
there's two conversations here. It's like, but people are like, oh, you have to get maximum return on this guy. It's like the same thing with Mitch Marner, where you're like, well, you have to get this amazing trade package. It's like, no, you got to get what the market says he's worth.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose, unless you think that there's value, unless you really do see a scenario where he gets back to being himself and that, yeah, those two pillars of this franchise at their very best are worth what you can extend them for. And the Mark Finestan thing.
Stuff.
No, but it's...
Hey, they've never shown it before. Why not give them more money to see if they show it in the future?
They've shown it before.
They've never won a playoff game.
But so what? This isn't hockey. This isn't basketball. Like, it's not because those guys have... So what, you think that there's like a separate like in the playoffs that Vlad and Bo can't get it done in the playoffs?
No, I think that they can be good players. I think that they can help you get there. I do think that they can perform in the postseason, but no, I don't think Bobichet necessarily is going to age extremely well at short.
Okay, but that's different than what you're talking about. Because the Leafs argument is like when the postseason hits, like Mitch Marner isn't the 100-point guy is during the regular season.
What I would say though is that the idea that you can have these two guys as a fulcrum to success even in the regular season together, where they just lift your team into a special place, I think is misplaced.
I mean, Bobichet led the American League in hits two consecutive years, would have been a third and was one of the best offensive players at his position in baseball, and they made the playoffs those years. He didn't hurt them. Like, he helped them.
No,
what do you mean?
I'm saying he's hurt them. I'm saying that the play has been, hey, you can have these two guys in the middle of your lineup and that they are going to be enough. I guess the play was Springer too. No, I'm saying it was supposed to be all three of them, and you're going to be keeping Springer because he's not going anywhere. You're not getting off that money unless he continues to tear it up, and then I would be saying, how much are you willing...
If you have anybody that believes in
how
what
much
he's
are you
doing,
willing to pay for him? I'm saying the idea of those three guys now in particular being enough to power an offense and then just build kind of whatever offense around them, which is what they tried to do these last couple of years. It's not a working theory to me.
No, but you need three bats anyways, right? Yeah. Like you're going to have to remake half of the lineup anyways, but
But they had that opportunity this past offseason.
Come on though. Like Bobichet at his, not even his best, his career average numbers with this Vladimir Guerrero Jr., that's a pretty good middle of the order. Like you're not going to quibble with that, are you?
No, I think that's fine.
Yeah, so that's good. So,
but now their price is going up into the, this is what? What's Bo going to be? At least 250?
I guess. Like 300 feels like the going right now.
No, but I feel like Vladdy's got to get 300.
Sure. I mean,
Bo gets 300 now? No, I don't think so.
I don't know what the price is. It's weird because the free agents market of a season ago with how depressed it was, but those guys being kind of unique cases kind of throws things a little out of whack. The other thing from the Finestan thing, though, was this little nugget, which kind of got buried. To me, was the more newsy part of it. It's like, the Blue Jays are going to try and regroup for 2025. They're only going to sell the guys that are pending free agents. Like, we kind of know that. Yeah. Kind of assume that. The part that kind of got buried to me was Blue Jays have talked with agents for both players, Bo and Vlad, about potential extensions extension, sources said. Uh-huh. Although the club has been unable to get a deal done with either, one source said it's, quote, a much smaller gap than has been reported, leaving Toronto hopeful it will be able to retain at least one of their young stars beyond 2025.
But if they didn't retain one of them, mm-hmm. like, board it up.
Yeah, well, then it's, yeah. what was it all for?
Yeah, you got to retain one of them.
Yeah. But yeah, the idea that okay, my interpretation.
Well, one of them is Vladdy.
Really? I mean, I guess. I mean, my interpretation of every little small. Now? I don't know. I have no idea.
Bo Strikey is a guy who's afraid?
No.
Yeah.
But I don't. This quote to me is like counter to every bit of reporting I've seen about the contract negotiations prior. Because, like, do you think Vlad is afraid? Like, neither of these guys are, like, in a financial spot where they're afraid. And
you
obviously,
and I think
they're
the same thing with Vlad.
Yeah.
When Soto signs his contract, Vladdy will be right behind him. He'll go, that's what that number is? And the Jays are going to go, yeah, you're not him. And he's going to go, obviously. Obviously, I'm not him.
Because I'm right-handed.
Yeah.
I'm the same. I'm right-handed.
Yeah.
And I play a position where it's like offense is harder to find in the American League.
Yeah,
like all of a sudden, first base is like the new shortstop.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, what happened to that?
It's like Ben Rice. God, how do the Yankees just like fall into a like a Ben Rice?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
They're the Yankees.
Yeah.
The Yankees.
Blue Jays fell into Spencer Horowitz, okay?
Yeah.
Who, it's incredible. Like, the quote that he had about how his mentality offensively changes from going from a first baseman where he's like, yeah, I'm trying to hit home runs because, like, I understand the position. Yeah. Like, second baseman, say, I'm just trying to get base hits, which is actually what I do.
Uh-huh.
And, like, how much more valuable he seems playing passable defense.
It's funny because, I think that the Jays have found pieces from their minor league system.
Leo Jimenez, better than Bo Bichette?
Yeah, he's hot last night.
Buddy, he's done is hit.
Yeah.
And there's no debate that right now, with the way Dalton Varsho's hit the last couple of months and the way Bo Bichette has hit all season long, Blue Jays are better off in the immediate future without those guys in the lineup.
The Dalton Varsho thing is hilarious. Like, right as the worm was turning, being yo, they did it. Yep. They won this trade. He went, I'm never going to hit again.
It's like, there's one nugget of positive news for this front office. It's like, give me that.
Yeah. The whole league. Buddy, it's like watching. So when I used to follow the Mariners more closely and they got Justin Smoke, it was just low and away, low and away, low and away. Like, couldn't lay off it. And it was just frustrating over and over. And it's the same thing. Like, you pitch Varsho away, and it's like out, 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 out. Oof. Yeah.
He's a great defender, though. He's going to be this team's everyday center fielder.
He's a great defender.
And
there's no doubt.
He seems pretty similar offensively to the guy we saw a year ago. At least his home road splits are not.
When he runs into him, they're gorgeous.
At least his home road splits are closer. Yeah. His home splits are actually higher than his road splits, but they're pretty similar. So at least like he's rectified that problem. The overall problem remains, though, that he's like, he hits home runs occasionally. Yeah. Slightly better than Bradley Zimmer, but like, he's not somebody you should count on for offense day in, day out.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that when they first brought him in and they hit him in the cleanup spot, and they thought that's what they
pretty
he was
good indication
be,
of
was,
the of the franchise
was what the intention was in the in the trade that is not materialized. Anyway, I can't believe they're going into another draft with a guy who hasn't drafted anybody, and I can't believe that they're going to go into a trade deadline with the idea that. It's just going to be fine to move around the deck chairs. And I can't believe that we're staring down an offseason where we're probably going to be hearing from Mark Shapiro going, I don't know why it was a slog again after last year. Remember when I sat up here and I said that it was the most painful season that I've ever witnessed, and now I'm back
here
again?
This is where we disagree. To me, no smart baseball person can look at this season and say that it's like a head-scratching one. Like, all the signs are there. This team is just bad. Last year, you could have made excuses. There's no excuses for this year.
Ben Ennis, enjoy your vacation.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you took the All-Star week off.
Oh, man, what a shocking move.
I like the All-Star week. I'll be here next week. So subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, and we'll see you tomorrow.